Welcome, everyone, to the ProWrestling.net All Access Podcast. My name is Chris Shore, and joining me, as always, is Jake Barnett. We are here for your SmackDown audio review. It's November the 17th. We're looking at the November 16th SmackDown, the go-home show for this Sunday Survivor Series. Jake and I get together every Saturday and do this audio review for all of our readers here at .net. But it's not the only audio produced each week on the site, as most of you know. We do a ton of audio each week, a little over 6 hours each and every week, some weeks more than others. Jason Powell does his WWE Raw review on Monday nights. Jake and Will Pruitt get together each week and do the .NET countdown where they look at the best and the worst in professional wrestling each week. Will also comes along usually on Fridays with a TNA Impact audio review. Jason does a Q&A audio usually on Fridays where members can ask both wrestling and non-wrestling questions. And then on Thursdays, Jason and I get together for the .NET Weekly Audio Show. It's our flagship show. We look at all the news of the week, often break news that's not made its way to the site. Not been a great couple of weeks for news. Been kind of slow around the wrestling industry right now, but we do that show each and every week. That show, along with most of those that we do each week, is exclusive to our members. So if you like what you hear today and you want to sample some of the other audio we do, all you need to do is be a .NET member. Just head on over to ProWrestling.net, click on the right-hand side of the page where it says .NET member sign up. Click there, we'll get you started for only $7.50 if you take the 30-day option. If you know you want to be a member for a full year, go ahead and sign up for that. We'll knock $2 off each month, take you down to $5.50. You'll get access to all those audios each week, as well as the ad-free version of the site. Access to our .NET member forum, our newly revamped .NET member forum, which you should definitely be checking out if you're a member and haven't signed up, as well as the .NET member blog section. Lots of neat stuff going on in the forum now. We've got a bookie section. People are betting right now on what's going to happen at Survivor Series. And, of course, Jason Powell and I will be here Sunday night, both of us covering Survivor Series and doing a members exclusive audio review of the show that night as well. And, Jake, this was WWE's last chance to sell Survivor Series. Jason and I talked about the show on Thursday in .NET Weekly. He asked me to give, on a scale of 1 to 10, my enthusiasm level. I gave it a 5. So I'll ask you just to start off with right now, where are you on a scale of 1 to 10 with your excitement level for Survivor Series?
Well, I mean, if you would have asked me after Monday's Raw, I probably would have given you a 5-2. And I think last night's show, while it wasn't spectacular, I did think they put quite a bit of focus on what was going on at Survivor Series with the team survival elimination match, as well as the World Heavyweight Championship match. So I think they pushed it up a notch for me. So I'll give it a 6, just based on what we saw last night.
Yeah, I said I was 5, borderline 6. I'm going to go with you moving on up to a 6. They did a good job of putting heat on that Survivor Series match, the actual traditional 5-on-5 Survivor Series match. Did a pretty good job of adding more heat to Sheamus and Big Show, I thought. It's a show that on paper looks to be, you know, one that could be very good. That Survivor Series match has a lot of talent in it. There could be a lot of great moments in that match. The main event is going to be a spectacle with Ryback and John Cena in there together, and, of course, CM Punk drawing great heat right now. You know, I'm interested to see if Big Show and Sheamus can have a repeat of what they did at Hell in a Cell. So there's a lot on paper to be excited about in the sense of seeing the actual show that day. Just not great hype for it right now. It doesn't feel like a B-show. It doesn't feel like a throwaway show, but it's hard to say that I'm jacked up and excited about it. I'm looking forward to it, so I'm with you. I think I have to push over to a 6 at this point. But let's talk about the show. It was taped in Cleveland, Ohio on November the 13th. Of course, Cleveland, the home of The Miz, and he opened the show. Well, we got the new TNA inspired. We have to, you know, we call a spade here. This is just like TNA. WWE now, of course, before Raw and SmackDown, doing these voiceover kind of recaps of what's been going on across all storylines, all the major storylines. So they have that. They get hyped for some of the things that was going to happen on SmackDown. And then Miz is introduced right out. Sheamus is shown backstage first, pacing around. They said he was back there waiting on Big Show. The camera crew was back there with him, waiting in case anything happened. So they cut right back to the ring, and we are on for Miz TV. Miz is introduced, standing there in the ring, and Miz talked about Survivor Series and being in the Survivor Series match. He said that, obviously he got the cheap pop being at home, so it was good to be home in Cleveland. He said that, you know, he was a guy who was going to do what he wanted to do. He wasn't going to pay attention to any captain, whether it was Dolph Ziggler or his guest at this time, and he introduced his captain, Mick Foley, who came out to a pretty good pop from the crowd. He and Miz had some fun doing Mick Foley's cheap pop moment where he mentioned Akron, and Miz said, don't try to get cheap, a cheap pop here. And he goes, you mean right here in Cleveland, Ohio, which I... You know, this stuff's always kind of cheesy, but when they find unique ways and fun ways to get there, I kind of appreciate that. This one was a lot of fun. They ended up introducing all of the people on Team Foley. As Miz pointed out, that they all had problems with each other. He and Kofi Kingston had had problems. He and Randy Orton had had problems. Of course, Team Hell No just has problems as the storyline goes. You know, but he had everybody come out there. He said, Miz, of course, or Mick, of course, hyped his book, that he did, the Christmas story that he did with Miz as the main character. But when he had everybody come out, they started talking. Team Hell No, started at first. Kane started to talk. Brian interrupted. They bickered for a minute. Brian said that Kane is ready to apologize for saying that Brian is the weak link in the team. Kane said that he's tired of carrying Brian, and of course, they went back and forth. Kofi jumped in and tried to calm things down. Miz pointed out that, you know, he shouldn't be the guy to try to play peacemaker, that last week he tried to shake his hand and Kofi kicked him in the face. Kofi, in probably one of the better lines he's ever given in his WWE career, said, if you don't take two steps back, I'm going to do it again. I was really impressed that, you know, what Kofi had to say, as little as it was very effective here. He didn't look like a chump. It wasn't silly. It was very good, the heat between he and The Miz. Mick Foley said it looked like Randy Orton might be the voice of reason, which might be the most absurd thing I've ever heard on WWE television. Orton said that, he had problems with everybody there, that, you know, even Foley. He said, you threw me into a pile of thumbtacks a while ago. But even with all that, I like you more than anybody else on this team. They continued to bicker as Dolph Ziggler's music hit, and he and most of his team walked out on the stage. Cody Rhodes, the one person not there, and of course Cody injured, as this was taped earlier in the night, in the show that aired Wednesday night, WWE's main event, took a bad backdrop. I watched it, I covered it, you can read my report, it's on the site. Didn't look like Kane did anything wrong, it's just a backdrop. That Cody didn't get all the way over on. Jason talked about in .NET Weekly this week that he believed it was Paul Heyman that told him, of all the moves that he didn't want to take, of all the bumps he didn't want to take, probably the highest on the list for him was the backdrop, because it's just one of those moves that can go so wrong, and it looked like Cody went wrong. They're saying it's a shoulder, some sort of shoulder injury and a concussion. There's no doubt he was concussed. If you saw that match, he was as loopy as he could be standing on the ring. But we don't know yet what's going on with Cody Rhodes. Probably won't find out until the time of the match on Sunday. If we hear anything, obviously we'll have it on the site for you guys. But everybody comes out except for Cody Rhodes. Dolph Ziggler starts talking, saying that, you know, there's the team in the ring that's just full of schism and problems, while his is a unified team led by one charismatic leader. Of course, Del Rio and Ricardo Rodriguez were over on the side talking. Ziggler kept trying to get him to focus on him and what he was saying. Del Rio said, you know what, I don't think you're really worthy of leading this team. They went back and forth. Foley jumped in and said, you know, you guys seem to be having problems too, and I've been given the power to make some matches out here, so I'm going to do that. He put Ziggler and Del Rio against Miz and Orton for later in the show. He said that Barrett was a guy who, Barrett jumped in and said that he was happy Miz didn't make it or wasn't on the team anymore, was glad that he quit because he was better than Miz anyway. He, of course, was Miz's replacement on Team Ziggler. Foley at that point said, you know, that's great. I'm glad you feel that way, Barrett, because you're going to be in action tonight against Kane. And then that led to Damian Sandow. Well, Daniel Bryan starts screaming no, which of course set off Damian Sandow, who cut in and said that the one word simpleton, goat face one word simpleton, needed to shut up. He then made some reference to Kofi being a tie dye dreadlock something. It was a pretty good line, I thought. Kofi asked if that was the best he could come up with, and Mick Foley said, you know what, Sandow, you've made my life really easy. The third match starts right now. And that will be Kofi Kingston versus Damian Sandow. They went into commercial break from there. you know, it was a pretty good opening, I thought. Jake, again, you know, as we both talked about it at the start of the show, this, you know, they did a good job of focusing on this match. This was okay. It didn't set the world on fire, but everybody was capable here. Everybody said what they needed to say, and they got to some logical matches pretty quickly. I wonder what the original plan was, though, with Cody being out there. I wonder if there was another match, if Cody versus Daniel Bryan was maybe a match we were going to see.
Yeah, that seemed like it was a piece that was missing, too. Bryan kind of got left out in the cold with Cody being unable to compete. I mean, if there was any criticism of this segment, I thought everybody performed well, like you said. I mean, there wasn't anybody who, you know, just looked really terrible on the microphone. But they crammed so much into this segment that it almost felt kind of inorganic. It almost felt too scripted to me, where they had Miz only out there by himself for about 10 seconds, then they brought out Foley, and then it was all a team Foley, and then Ziggler. It just kind of, the way it flowed, it really felt like a forced television segment where, you know, it didn't seem to flow, because we didn't even find out that Foley was given the authority to make matches until, what, three-quarters of the way through the whole thing? And then he just kind of started making matches. So, I don't know. That would be my one criticism of it, is they kind of got lazy with it and decided that they just had to cram as much information as they could. And it just it felt just a little bit ham-fisted. But other than that, I thought everybody's performance was pretty good. I mean, adequate at worst.
Yeah, I mean, it was predictable when Ziggler came out. Like I said, it wasn't, you know, it didn't set the world on fire, but it was, everybody did what they needed to do. This is often the case with WWE. They would just shoehorn people in, and you kind of, you sit there and you go, wow, you really shoehorned everybody in. But, you know, once you're in the shoe, it's kind of okay, and that's what this situation was. We came back from break, and that led to our first match, Damian Sandow defeating Kofi Kingston in 9 minutes and 38 seconds. Fair match. I was kind of looking forward to this. This was the one match that I thought would be really good. I thought that Kane and Wade Barrett would be a great match when it went on last. I knew we weren't going to get much of a match, and we didn't. But I had high hopes for this match. Didn't live up to what I thought it was going to be. In fact, the finish is kind of the whole match in a microcosm. You've got Sandow on his back in the ropes. Kofi walks over towards him to get him. He kicks Kofi in the leg. Kofi falls down. Sandow stands up. Kofi stands up, and then Sandow grabs him and rolls him up. It was a good-looking roll-up. It wasn't one of the, you know, usually we see these weak schoolboy roll-ups, and you're like, how did that guy get pinned? At least Kofi looked pinned here. That's the only highlight of the entire end of this match. I was rather disappointed. I guess they're holding back. They didn't want to do too much before Survivor Series, but I was disappointed in this.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there. You know, maybe I'm a victim of my own expectations as well, but the match never seemed like it gelled. I mean, there was a lot of moments, which I guess are kind of one of Sandow's signature spots where he sells frustration and leaves the ring, and it broke up the action quite a bit, because they had two or three of those in the 1 or 2 minutes before the commercial break. And then, you know, it was a long break, because they only took a short break after that first segment. So there was, maybe 2 minutes of a match, and then maybe three and a half minutes of commercial, and then just a couple of minutes after the break before the match ended. And they managed to get a couple of nice-looking spots in after the commercial break, but then it was kind of that hurried roll-up. And I think Sandow might have got a fistful of tights or something to get the pin there at the end. But, yeah, it just didn't seem like... you know, a match that you would expect from guys who, you know, are just eminently talented like both of these guys are. You would have expected better, and maybe it was just the awkward TV timing, or maybe it was what you said, where they didn't want to give away too much before they got into their Survivor Series match, but it definitely fell below my expectations.
Yeah, I mean, certainly expectations were high, but I don't think it was bad. I mean, obviously that made it worse, but they just... Like you said, I don't know if it was they just didn't find gel or find a way to gel together. They were holding back. The way TV cut it, whatever it was, it didn't work, and it didn't even get close to what I had hoped it would be. But, you know, hey, we've got the Survivor Series. I think that's going to be a good long match. It might be a half-hour match, pushing 25 minutes or more on Sunday. So, because I think there's a lot of talent in there that they want to show off. And so, maybe we'll get more from these guys and some good stuff on Sunday. Sheamus was shown backstage, again, pacing around in the parking garage looking for Big Show. went to commercial, came back, we got a recap of the AJ voicemails that Vicky showed on Raw. I know we've talked about this off air, but I think we talked about it in the last time we recorded too, but I mean, are you still with me? Do you still think this is ultimately going to be AJ and Dolph Ziggler together? I still wonder if maybe some of those they never acted like it, but I thought that maybe some of those voicemails had actually been left on Dolph Ziggler's phone, because I still think that's whose hotel room AJ went into on the videos.
Yeah, you got to think there's going to be some kind of double cross here. I mean, Cena's just too squeaky clean to do this kind of storyline. And, you can make him look like, the good guy and, cement Ziggler as the dastardly heel by, having AJ do the turn on Cena and having, Ziggler, finally dump Vicky for, a new manager, which I think would improve his act quite a bit. Because they've been talking about this the entire time, about how Vicky's been constantly fed new information by an anonymous source, and I think that's who it's going to end up being. So, yeah, I'm still with you. I think Ziggler's involved in this.
Yeah, but you would think that AJ would be like, those emails weren't left for John or something. She said you hacked his phone and cut up the different messages I left him. And maybe that's the case. I don't know. It seemed weird to me that I ultimately think that's where they're going with this, and they're still not hinting at it any more than they are. But maybe they don't even know where the hell they're going with it. Maybe we're just reading something into it that isn't there because they don't know where they're going with it. I will wait and see. But we suddenly, as soon as that video went off, we're back in the ring. We've got six women in the ring. Nobody gets the ring introduction. Second match of the night, Caitlin, Layla, and Natalya defeating Oksana, Eve, and Alicia. Fox, you didn't have a time here. Probably about 4 minutes, 3 minutes, something like that.
Yeah, it was between 3 and 4 minutes. I must have forgot to post it in the end of the report there.
Yeah, and finish on this comes with Caitlin pushing Alicia Fox into Eve with a drop kick, and then she hit her finisher to get the pin. Of course, Eve looking very frustrated and concerned. She will face Caitlin on Sunday for the Divas Championship. Here we are again with a Divas match that was wrestled pretty good. I mean, it wasn't great. It wasn't terrible. Some of the women are more competent than the others, and the ones that are more competent had better time in the ring than those who aren't. But, we don't care. They've got the one story going on. They put all six women in the ring almost as if to say, ooh, look, we actually have more demons than just Caitlin, Eve, and Layla. But nobody cares about the other three, and we barely care about the three that are in a story. It's so frustrating still to watch the Divas in WWE. As much as I want to see these women paid and get a chance to shine and all that, part of the fan of me just says, you know what, just let me put them out there. It's an insult to my intelligence on some level for this to be what you continue to parade out for the Divas division.
Yeah, it's really too bad because, there was a lot of optimism just a little while ago when news broke that WWE had signed Sarah Del Rey. And, I'm still happy for her that she's getting, a great opportunity to work in a much bigger wrestling company. But I just hate to think that she's going to be put out there and ignored like this. And that's kind of what we're getting with the Divas division. I mean, they only have really one great character at this point, and I think that's Eve. You know, she's really separated herself from the pack as far as what she's been able to do, dramatically as far as acting and promos and developing a character and whatnot. And, maybe it's just because they don't give the other Divas enough time that we don't see that kind of talent out of them, too. But it definitely feels like they've kind of relegated the Divas to being an afterthought again, since they've had so many talent issues with people leaving and Karma's saga that kind of played the way that played out must have been very disappointing for the Divas division and other things. So, I hope it gets cycled back up to the top of the list as far as how much attention is paid to it eventually. I mean, they've just had a really bad run of luck with talent and other things, and it's kind of resulted in what we're getting right now, which is almost nothing.
Quickly, you mentioned Sarah Del Rey, and it looks like she's only ever going to be a trainer. She's not going to make her way to the main roster, is what it looks like right now. She's going to be, but that even begs the question. She's the best female wrestler in the United States. I don't think there's any question about it. I'm sure somebody will argue, but in my opinion, she's the top. It's her, and then Karma, and then everybody else in a lot of ways. And if that's the case, why would you hire the best wrestler? I mean, if you say, okay, that's who you want to train, that makes sense. But if all they're ever going to get is 2-minute matches and silly segments, why? I mean, again, I'm happy for her getting paid. I think she's someone who deserves it. I think she's worked hard and deserves it. But why have someone with that much talent training women, trying to teach them how to do the things she does for a 90-second match? And it just, it's so frustrating. I know we get stuck on it sometimes, but it just, sometimes it's just really rubbed in your face how frustrating it can be. Let's see. After that, we went to the announce team, plugged the Survivor Series match, or excuse me, the Survivor Series pre-show, which they said was going to be 3MB versus Team Cobro, but it's actually going to be Justin Gabriel and Tyson Kidd who are going to be in there. And we don't know which members of 3MB. At first, we knew it was not going to be Drew McIntyre. It was going to be Jinder Mahal and Heath Slater. Now they're acting like it could be any of the three. So maybe McIntyre's back from bereavement. For those who don't know, his mother passed away this week. He's been taking some time off for that. And of course, prayers and best wishes for his family as they go through this time. So maybe he's back. I don't know. Regardless of whether it's Cobro or Ken Gabriel, is there any friggin' reason to watch this pre-show with that match? I can't believe this is what they give us on a pre-show. How is that going to sell a pay-per-view?
Yeah, you know, it's definitely not the greatest of reasons to tune in to watch the pre-show. I mean, I actually do like Kidd and Gabriel and think they have a lot of potential, but, yeah, 3MB is an act that just does not appeal to me, and, you know, and I feel terrible for Drew McIntyre, but I could not, you know, care less about which two of those guys is competing. It's just not something that interests me at all. So, yeah, I don't find that a compelling match to make me want to, you know, jump onto YouTube a half an hour before the show starts to specifically just to catch it. It seems like something I could miss and not really think I missed anything at all.
Certainly very confusing, but we'll see what happens on Sunday. We're backstage again. Sheamus still back there waiting for Big Show to show up. Booker T walks up, says he knows he's upset that with what's going on, but Sheamus is putting him in an awkward position. Sheamus said he understood, but he told Booker that if he saw Big Show, to tell him that if he had any guts, he would see him in the ring later. Booker said he needed to keep his cool, and he would have his way with Big Show in 48 hours. Booker said, "Do you feel me?" About a concussion tonight ending his match, the pay-per-view, and Sheamus said that he did. Booker was just trying to watch out for the match, he said. You know, just kind of standard boilerplate stuff that you would expect the GM trying to keep these two guys apart. Miz and Orton made their ring entrances. Del Rio and Ziggler were out next for our third match of the night. It went to commercial pretty quick, but this one saw Miz and Orton defeating Ziggler and Del Rio in 10 minutes and 35 seconds. Finish on this cup. This was a really good match. By the time this match was over, I was really into this match. The crowd was hot for this. All four guys were flying around the ring. This was a fun match. This is the match of the night, really. If you want to see a match, this is the one you need to see. Just had good energy, good excitement through it. I was really impressed with this match. Unlike Sandow and Kofi, which didn't meet expectations, this one kind of exceeded expectations for me. I figured we'd get some kind of paint-by-numbers, phoning-in stuff from these four. But, no, they worked really hard on this match. I was real impressed. Like I said, a lot of energy at the end. Orton hitting all his big moves. He sets up for the RKO on Ziggler. But Miz reaches out, tags himself in, hits the skull-crushing finale for the victory, celebrates in the ring, and starts getting in Orton's face, telling about how awesome he is because he got the victory. So Orton hits him with the RKO and then celebrates himself. Adding more heat to the problems between the teams. This match kind of caught me off guard. I was kind of watching it with one eye and, just kind of getting the highlights or whatever. By the time it was over, I was in this match and was really excited for the finish.
Yeah, this was definitely by far the match of the night, and it was, it kind of broke the typical formula for these kind of tag team main event matches. I mean, the babyfaces still went over here, but they did a good job of really cementing the tension between, you know, the Miz and Orton with the, there was multiple times during the match where they kind of grated on each other's nerves with various things. And I thought, Ziggler and Del Rio did a pretty good job of antagonizing. They managed to work on The Miz for a good long time, and he got really good sympathy from the hometown audience, and Orton looked really good for the hot tag. And you know, the conclusion, the last probably 2 or 3 minutes where Orton was really fired up, and then The Miz kind of snuck in and took the win from him was really good television, and I thought it was you know, by far the probably the best in-ring moment of the week, you know, thus far on SmackDown. So yeah, I was pleasantly surprised by the way this played out. I was really expecting, you know, just kind of a boilerplate tag match, but they managed to deliver some interesting stuff there.
Yeah, I think if you want to watch a match from the show, if you're looking for something to watch, see this match. It's pretty good. We get video of Big Show beating up William Regal on Monday, as well as Sheamus' promo, all that from Monday. Sheamus makes his way to the ring and cuts the promo. He said that Big Show crossed the line, that he was happy with their match at Hell in a Cell, but he just showed himself to be a bully when he took out Regal. He said he's committed to taking out Big Show on Sunday, and that the time for talking is over, and the time for fighting is now. We're back to that kind of silliness. Big Show's music hit. He walked out onto the stage and said that Sheamus doesn't get it. You know, he said, what's going to happen with all this talking? He said, every time Sheamus calls him out, William Regal ends up getting knocked out. He told Sheamus he wasn't afraid of what he could do to him, but what he would do, what Big Show would do to Sheamus. Sheamus said, that was fine, I'll take care of you right now. He jumps out of the ring, begins to storm up the ramp. Booker T runs out, kind of scoops up Sheamus, blocks him, keeps telling him to calm down. Sheamus is trying to push back past him. And get to Big Show. Show eventually just kind of shrugged his shoulders and walked backstage, letting Booker calm Sheamus down. Booker said that Sheamus needed to leave the building. Sheamus was still fired up. Booker said, look, this is not a request. I am telling you, get out of my building. Let's go this way. Come on now. And finally they walked backstage to allow or so that Booker could throw Sheamus from the building. Again, we've seen this angle so many times. This is, you know, old stuff. You know, the only real difference is Booker T's a wrestler and a beefy guy, so he could come out and actually physically kind of restrain Sheamus without having to have the 7 to 10 local jobber security guys who were playing that part. So, I mean, you know, it was what it was. Nothing spectacular. It was effective. But it just seems like they're kind of spinning their wheels a little bit with this. I think they're going on another month with it. So they're just kind of keeping pace. I expect a screwy finish at Survivor Series to allow Big Show to keep the title, but the feud to continue. It doesn't feel like great stuff, but they hit all the right notes here in trying to put heat on this match for Sunday, right?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't spectacular, but I thought it was a competently done segment. I mean, it probably would have been more visually interesting if they had, you know, a gaggle of security guards or refs trying to keep Sheamus back like they normally do. But I thought Booker played the role pretty well, and I think, Big Show has really been effective in being kind of the bully heel, knocking out Sheamus' best friend and aggravating him. And I think what they're attempting to do with Sheamus is kind of shift, or pivot away from, you know, the serial guy, like you had talked about in the previous weeks, and towards more of an aggressive, brawler type character that he had success with earlier on in his career. And I think they're starting to have some success with it. I don't think they've quite, pivoted far enough away from where he was. I mean, like you said, he does still, kind of speak in cliche for the most part. But I'm liking where they're attempting to go with Sheamus, and I think Big Show is leagues better than he was just a few months ago. So they haven't really moved this feud much in the last couple of weeks. It's kind of been on repeat. But after the pay-per-view, I'm assuming we'll see more of this, and maybe they'll move the story forward in a more interesting way. But this was was good, but nothing spectacular.
And when we came back from commercial, Big Show's backstage with Booker, and he's like, I really appreciate how you handled that. You really showed Sheamus that he can't talk to us like that. Booker T said, us? What are you talking about? Booker said to cut the act. He said that Sheamus was gone, but that Big Show would be in a main event, and turned to walk away. Show said, wait, it's not Sheamus in it. And Booker T said, no, don't worry about who it is, but hey, no one's bigger than the show, right? And Show kind of nodded as Booker walked away. Kind of figured out where it was going at this point. That was kind of a dead giveaway. But they cut to the ring. We'll save the surprise for those who haven't heard. We cut to the ring. Kane and Wade Barrett make their entrances for our fourth match of the night. Kane beating Wade Barrett by DQ at 1:06. This match had just gotten started. Kane hit the top rope clothesline and set up for the chokeslam. out runs the rest of Team Ziggler, minus Cody Rhodes, of course, and attack Kane, which causes the DQ. Daniel Bryan runs out and gets beat up a little bit. Mick Foley comes out and waves to the back. Kofi Kingston runs out and jumps in the ring. He gets beat up a little bit. And then the only guy to get music for his run-in, Randy Orton's music hits, he runs out and ends up settling the score, evening the odds enough to where Del Rio and I guess it was Barrett were thrown from the ring, and then he hit RKOs on Sandow and on Ziggler to stand tall in the ring. Miz came out holding his jaw from his RKO earlier and stood on the stage as he and Orton stared down each other going into commercial break. You know, again, when you get Sandow goes over in the first match, the heel goes over in the first match, babyfaces go over in the second match, you've only got one match left, the rubber match, you know it's going to end in a schmoz, and that way neither team looks the best going into it. The babyfaces win the brawl in the process, but also at the same time you have Miz out there, again, as you said, cementing the tension between them. So this was, I mean, you could kind of have figured out what was going to go on here in your sleep, couldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty paint by numbers, and that's okay. I mean, you don't want to give too much away here. And they did do their best to, you know, they didn't have Rhodes to go out there and join in the brawl, so they had to hold somebody back. And then I think it actually worked for them to have Miz come out later holding his jaw, because it played up the fact that he's kind of a wild card in this, being a former member of the heel team, now reluctantly joining the face team. And so that ended up working, and it did, you know, it did kind of move the ball forward a bit for, you know, for the Survivor Series match. So in that respect, it worked, but you could see this coming from orbit, so it wasn't too dramatic when it happened.
After commercial, we get a video that recaps the Brad Maddox storyline from Hell in a Cell, and then, of course, his killing this past Monday. If you haven't seen it, WWE has put up, if you remember the show Monday, they were talking about he was walking around with a cameraman. They even showed him a couple of times. They put the video out. It's kind of funny. I mean, it's a little bit funny. It's about 6-7 minutes long, something like that. And it's definitely worth checking out. I'm pretty sure we have it on the site. I think Jason put it up. But if not, it's on the WWE YouTube channel. Have you had a chance to see it by any chance, Jake?
You know, I have not. I'm really busy week at work, so I didn't catch it yet. But if you say it's funny, I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, I think it came out maybe Thursday or Friday when they posted it. But it's pretty cute. He plays it up pretty good. He seems to be kind of a funny, charismatic guy. And, you know, if he's really trying to be a wrestler, he doesn't have a great build yet. But, you know, if he can maybe bulk up a little bit, I think maybe he's got the charisma to get it done. So we'll see what happens with Brad Maddox. I hope we don't see him Sunday. I think it's too soon after he was basically destroyed, killed on Monday. I don't think it would make sense for him to get involved with the triple threat. So hopefully no Brad Maddox on Sunday. Jason and I will have coverage to find out for sure. But after the Maddox video, we get the announced teams. They plug the WWE title match on Sunday. R-Truth made his way to the ring to sit in on commentary. Antonio Cesaro was out next. Sin Cara out after that. JBL and Josh Matthews bickered with Sin Cara because Matthews, what was he called Sin Cara last week? JBL called him a loser, but Josh said he was something like enthralling or something like that. Like it was the way JBL was putting it, I thought was almost like it was like Josh was maybe had a little crush on Sin Cara.
Yeah, that I can't remember the exact term he used, but yeah, JBL said he was he was an all-star in Mexico, but a loser in the WWE, and then Matthews defended him in a way that made it sound like he had a bit of an attraction toward him, and I think JBL was just kind of poking fun at him for that.
Yeah, and you know, for those who want to know why we're happy JBL is back in the commentary booth, this is why. This is the kind of thing a heel commentator does. And quite frankly, just like he did with Michael Cole, he's making Josh Matthews a better play-by-play guy. Josh, they bicker a little too much sometimes, but they're still finding their way a little bit, and I'm really liking the work that they're doing. But that led to our fifth match of the night, Antonio Cesaro defeating Sin Cara at 4 minutes and 2 seconds. A lot of offense for Sin Cara here, no big surprise. But then we get the big pop-up European uppercut, and then he hit him with the neutralizer for the win. After the match, R-Truth stood up and took a mic. He said that he had another Jimmy he wanted to talk about, little Jimmy that he wanted to talk about. Little Jimmy Duggan, and then got the crowd chanting USA, as he climbed onto the ring apron and into the ring, getting the chant, the crowd would chant USA. He would say what on the beat in between. As much as R-Truth gets on my nerves, I never wanted to kill him more than in this segment. This drove me nuts.
Yeah, it's like the worst when they when they do the faux international foreigner is the bad guy merely because he's not from the United States, and you know they I don't know, it's just the worst type of stereotypical storyline. And you know, Cesaro deserves better. You know, R-Truth deserves better. You know, it's just really irritating. And you know, I hate to blame, you know, put all the blame on R-Truth, but he wasn't great here in any case. But this story is that they've been doing with this is just terrible. And I hope they move on after Sunday, because I think the U.S. title in any case deserves better than to have some lame feud about some foreigner. Making Cesaro out to be evil merely because he's a foreigner instead of the dastardly things he does in the ring. So it's just the worst of the worst when it comes to stereotypical, you know, kind of racist storylines they try to put on in WWE.
Yeah, Cesaro's a douche because he's a douche, not because he's Swiss. That needs to be why he's a douche. You know what I'm saying? Because he is. Because he's just, I mean, not him personally necessarily, but it's the character, obviously. That needs to be the story, not, oh, he sucks because he's Swiss. And especially Swiss. You know,
the neutral country, you know?
Yeah, why is the Swiss so bad? At least I understood it during the Cold War when it was the Russians that were bad and the poorly, poorly executed Muhammad Hassan storyline. I mean, all that at least made sense, but he's Swiss. Who gives a shit? But anyway, after commercial, we got Big Show, where we were teased Big Show versus his mystery opponent. Big Show makes his ring entrance, came out to the ring, was hopping around, getting ready, and of course, the Bollywood music hit. Show's face broke. I thought Show did a great job of acting here. Great Khali is his opponent. If you didn't see that coming, then really, you've not been watching wrestling wrong, because that was, you know, as much as we talked about the schmoz in the Survivor Series hype being so obvious, this one was even more so, with nothing's bigger than the Show. Well, one thing's bigger than the Show, and it's the Great Khali, but wasn't enough for him to beat, he wasn't big enough to beat Big Show tonight. Big Show defeated Khali in 3 minutes, 29 seconds, hit him with the KO punch. This was a standard kind of, you know, what you would expect from a big man match, but I thought the finish was pretty good. You had Show grabbing him for the choke slam, Khali hit the chop to get out of it and covered. Show kicked out, turned around and hit the KO punch, kind of a bit of a surprise. I at least like the finishing sequence. I'll give him credit for that.
Yeah, I mean, the last 15 seconds or so, you know, was actually pretty good with the reversals, out of the finisher, and then, you know, Khali hitting the chop and then going for the Punjabi plunge, and the Show kind of breaking free and hitting the KO punch. And, you know, that part of it was good, but the first 3 minutes and 15 seconds felt like, like you were watching Ishtar or some, you know, Gone with the Wind or something. It took a long time to get to that last 15 seconds, but, you know, it was exactly what you would expect, kind of a slow, awkward, lumbering match. But, you know, they gave it a good effort. It's just there's only so much you can do with Khali in there with an opponent that can't really, bump around for him like some of the smaller guys can.
And then Big Show stood in the ring celebrating Sheamus' music hit. He looked around, checked the ramp, checked through the crowd. Sheamus didn't show up. He played for a moment and then went off. Big Show's music hit again, so Show left the ring, walked to the back. The cameras followed him. He started walking through the parking lot, getting ready to leave. Matt Stryker walked up to ask him a question, and Show flinched at him. Stryker fled like a little girl. I don't blame him. But Stryker took off running. Show laughed about that. He opened the door to what I assume would be his tour bus. Sheamus jumped out and attacked him, and then WWE proceeded to commit the broken window fallacy of economic stimulation all across the back of the parking area. I think they ended up destroying windows in 3 different cars. Show's elbow went through the back window of one car. Sheamus went through the windshield of another car. I think they ended up breaking another windshield as well on another car. But they pretty much so brawled in the back until refs came in and eventually broke it up. But Sheamus was the one looking the best, because Show was laid out on the concrete to end the show. It's a pretty good brawl. It's kind of like to me, what's really selling this match at the pay-per-view was the last match, the fact that it was so good. They've done the right thing with Sheamus in the loss. They started to give him some of his edge back. This showed some of it here, and so I appreciate that. But it's been a little flat overall, but, they put great heat on this show, should be fired up, and as far as character-wise, and, maybe actually while you tell me what you think about the closing segment, also throw in, do you think they can repeat last month's match?
Well, as far as the closing segment goes, I guess it was fairly good as brawls go. I didn't think it sold me on the match any more than
right.
what they had already done throughout the night. It didn't really separate that heat from anything. It didn't kind of push it into the upper atmosphere, so to speak. It wasn't like an extra second rocket boost or anything like that. It was just kind of there. I guess they wanted to, give Sheamus a bit of an edge going into the pay-per-view because, he had been soundly beaten each time he had confronted Big Show throughout the last month. But I don't know if you really wanted to have Show, looking defeatable going into the pay-per-view, being that he's the monster heel. But I guess we'll see how it plays out on Sunday. I expect another, great match from these two. Whether they can top what they did at the last pay-per-view, I'm uncertain. I'm sure it'll be great quality, but part of what made that match so great at Hell in a Cell was just the surprise that it was as good as it was, and now expectations are up, so I think it'll be difficult to reach what they did at Hell in a Cell, but I'm confident they're going to give it a great effort. I think they have good chemistry in the ring, so I'm really looking forward to the match itself.
Yeah, that was my concern on Thursday as well, is we know they can have a great match, and now that we know that, how does that affect our expectations for Sunday? I think it'll be a passable match, and I think Sheamus is a strong enough guy. The way he just effortlessly hoists Big Show up to hit White Noise, for example, is pretty amazing. And I think that because of that strength that Show can get away with some things that he couldn't with other guys. But I think it'll be a better than average Big Show match. But this didn't really add anything to it. It was pretty good as brawls go. It's always fun when we see him bust open car windows and that sort of thing. It gives a little extra layer of realism to it. But I don't think it did anything more, like you said, for this match. It was what it was before Sheamus jumped out of that bus. They pretty much have sold it as much as they can because they've been holding back, I think, for whatever the big finish of it is going to be in December. But that is your SmackDown audio review. I know we kind of went through it a little bit quick today. Part of that is my fault. I have to get up the road to Boone, North Carolina. Just a quick plug, if anybody is hearing this before Saturday night and you live in or around the Boone area, PWX Wrestling is holding a benefit show up there for a little boy. I said little girl on Thursday, I was confused. It's a little boy, stage 4 cancer, a real trooper, just the celebrity du jour up there for Boone, the Mellow Mushroom, which is a pizza place, and just all kinds of places involved in this. It's going to be a great show. Hurricane Helms is going to be there, Bobby Lashley going to be there, Al Snow, Adam Cole, Roderick Strong from Ring of Honor, just a lot of good names going to be there, and, of course, it's for a great cause. Get out there and check it out if you're in or around the Boone area. But before we get out of here, Jake, anything you want to add about SmackDown?
No, man, I think we covered it all. Just good luck at the show tonight, and hopefully the benefit turns out really well for that little boy.
Yep, should be a good time. And, again, if you heard this and you come out to the show, stop by and say, hey, I'll be the guy in the black suit, the pink shirt, because real men wear pink. Jason and I will be back on Sunday night for your audio review of the Survivor Series pay-per-view after we both do double coverage live on the site. You can follow along with us on the ad-free version of the site. Bet on the Survivor Series matches in the .NET member forum. Write a blog on your thoughts about it, and then listen to that member's exclusive audio review Sunday night just by becoming a .NET member. Head on over to ProWrestling.net. Click on the right-hand side of the page there on the .NET member sign-up link, and we will get you started. Thank you guys so much for listening. Jake and I found out this week that a lot of people really like this show, and we are very honored and appreciate that. We like doing it for you each week, and glad that you guys enjoy it. We will be back next week for another installment of this show. Until then, I will see you guys Sunday night for Survivor Series. Everyone have a great weekend, and take care.